This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. The date is the 17th of September. It's gone 20 minutes past seven. It's a late edition today. I'm here with my brilliant co-host, Henry Viola Hare. Find him at HTViola on X and on Blue Sky. And you can find me, Peter Higgins, at Conkers 3. It's been a very, very interesting week so far, folks. And of course, we have heard lots of news about lots of investments, inward investments by various technology companies in the UK. We'll speak about that a bit later on. But first, I'm going to ask my wonderful colleague, Henry Viola Hare, what his week has been like. Henry.
Hi, Peter. Lovely to be with you. I am having quite a good week so far. I actually have just come back. The reason we're recording a little bit late, I've just come back from a colleague at Gallagher, having a coffee with him. Turns out he listens to the pod. Reached out on LinkedIn, and I thought, oh, that's weird. Why didn't you message me on Teams internally? And he said, oh, well, I saw you on stage at the Master Investor Show. I'd seen the post, and I thought I want to message you on here before I forget. Could we go for a drink? So we've actually just had quite a nice catch-up, which was really, really nice. Big fan.
That is wonderful to hear. Well, hopefully he's listening to this one, so you can give him a shout out. Just his first name will do, Henry, if you want to.
Wale, hello. It was lovely to meet you. He's a project manager at Penn Underwriting. And if there is anybody out there that's looking for a junior business development person, I think he would be an excellent fit, actually. Although you might have to fight me for him.
Right. Okay. So we're doing recruitment as well on this pod tonight. That's not too bad. And just tweak your volume up just a little bit for me, please.
Am I a little bit on the quiet side? Let's turn the volume up.
A bit croaky and a bit popping in and out. So that's brilliant to hear. I think what's wonderful, Henry, is that there were so many people who have listened to the pod, and we spent a lot of time speaking about the Investor Summit last week. So last podcast, I don't want to go in over it again. But we've met so many individuals that have traveled far and wide, and some more closer, you know, living in and around London and that sort of area, who came to see us. So if you have been to see us and we didn't get a chance to speak to you and we haven't mentioned you, just send Henry a message, contact us on LinkedIn, contact us on X or Blue Sky, and just say hello. Yes, saw you at the Investor Summit. Give us your comments and feedback about it. Still not too late to make a comment about it. We want to hear from you as well. And if you're listening to the pod, please, please, please subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, whatever platforms you're on. And on YouTube, just go in and just say hello to us. Tell us what you thought of the pod. Yeah? Give us a thumbs up. Give us a like. Give us a comment. Right. So, Henry, markets. We've had the visit from Mr. Trump, and they're throwing money at everything. And I'm seeing, what have I got here? Major US tech companies, including Google, Microsoft, Nvidia, Salesforce, OpenAI, have announced plans to invest over $40 billion in AI in the UK. $40 billion.
That's a bit of a boost for Rachel Reeves.
That's a massive boost, mate. That's a massive boost. And then I've got to go on the negative side of it and go, okay, all this $40 billion investment in AI, where are we going to get the energy from?
to support
that $40 billion investment.
We've got it figured out, Peter. Basically, they're going to take all of us that become unemployed from the AI. They're going to put us on pedal bikes, and we're going to power the data centers. It's all thought through.
Right. Okay. There's me thinking we're going to make even more investments into small modular reactors, and going to be energy sufficient.
Open up the North Sea again.
No, we're not going to do that.
No. Pedal bikes all the way, my friend.
Pedal bikes. Okay. Let's be positive. We've got some inward investments, which means that Mr. T, President of the US, Mr. Trump, is going to get lots of other goodwills regarding his strategy. So let's watch out for that news unfolding over the next 2 or 3 months, what happens with that. Right. So, Henry, I want to start, if I may, indulge myself on this one here. First thing I want to talk about today is because we're stuck on the Twin Peaks in charity challenge, mate, for Memphis. We've been stuck for about a month. Everyone's been busy with the summer, going out and doing the business, listening to the pod, and da, 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 da. And the charity side of it has been neglected a little bit, and we didn't have a donation for over a month. So I understand you're all having summer and you're busy. Appreciate that. Thank you all for those that have already made a donation to help Memphis out with the employability scheme that they've got going on for disabled young people. Really appreciate your support so far. Sunday, one of my friends that listens on LinkedIn, and I'll give him a shout, won't say his surname, David, sends me a message on LinkedIn, mate. Nearly brought me to tears. Bless him. And his message on LinkedIn was, "Hi, Peter. Been catching up on the podcasts on a wet Sunday. It was horrible Sunday. Bleak weather on Sunday up north and in the Midlands as well. And surprised me, things had dried up a little. So sent a little donation to Memphis to get you over the 3K level. Hope all is well with you. Investor show sounded great. We'll have to see if I can be around for another one," as in next year's one. So I communicated with him, thanked him, went on to the Memphis Just Giving page, and there it was, David. And his comments were, "As a thank you for all you do on the podcast and for Memphis, you are two," as in me and you, Henry, "are two of the good guys on this planet, and we are all the better for it." And he dropped in £155 and £38.75 gift aid, which nudged us over £3,000. So a big
Beautiful.
thank you from Henry and I, David, if you're listening to this podcast as well, and for making that donation and getting us over the 3K. Really, really appreciate it. It's going to make a massive difference to the young people and young adults that are going to be on the employability scheme from Memphis. So where you go. So some good in the world, Henry.
Wonderful. Thank you very, very much, David, and thank you to everybody that's donated so far. And like Peter says, if you are back from your summer holidays and you've got a euros left or a few dollars left in the travel purse, consider making a little donation because it goes a long way. We're aiming for 5,000 by the end of the year. We've got a few months left to get there, so please do. I know there's lots of you out there listening. Please do consider giving a few pounds to Memphis.
Agreed, mate. So the Just Giving page is www.justgiving.com/page/Peter Higgins. And that is the Memphis Just Giving page for our Twin Peaks challenge. Right, Henry, where do you want to start, mate? Markets have been up, down, flat, waiting to see what the American markets do. Last week, everything seems to be at an all-time high in the Americas, whereas we're still trying to get back up there again.
Well, I wanted to take a bit of a different theme this week, actually. So you and I have talked quite a lot about dividend investing, and people know I love my dividends. They know you like dividends. But we've never really talked about growth investing all that much. And so I
Okay.
wanted to do a bit of an episode this week on growth investing. What causes growth, capital growth, this is. How do growth companies fit into your portfolio alongside income investments? And maybe explore some ideas for some names that we like that are growthy type shares. So we're effectively we're asking a simple question here. Where does growth in investing actually come from? It's not, magic. There's effectively three main sources. You've got dividends, which we talk about all the time. You've got earnings growth. And you've got valuation re-rating when the market decides that they want to pay more for the company than they did previously. And if we understand these engines of return, hopefully we can better understand where to put our money in the market. It gives us a better understanding of what's generating returns in our portfolio. So what are these examples really? For me, dividends we've covered to death. You've got companies like, I don't know, Legal & General, right? Big insurer, asset manager, pays out dividends 6, 7, 8% a year, year after year. Trickle into your account when you own the shares. You can either reinvest them in more shares or you can keep them in cash and buy something else. But they reward you year after year. They're steady, they're defensive, they compound. The idea is that you reinvest the capital that the income's generating, and therefore your position grows over time and your portfolio along with it. Then you've got earnings growth, and this is where businesses earn more money year after year. So they've taken your money, you know, they've raised some capital through share issuance, they've raised some capital through debt issuance and bonds, and they've then gone out and they've tried to earn some profit. Good example would be something like, who's that big publisher? RELX.
RELX, yeah.
Started out as a print publisher. It's now a global data and analytics powerhouse. It's one of the biggest data names in the world, held by some of the biggest fund managers ever, but started out as a tiny little publisher. And earnings have marched upwards and upwards and upwards for year after year after year. If you went back to 2008, even earlier, and bought some shares back then, you'd be sat on a lovely profit today. And that has basically been caused by the share price following the path of those earnings as they go upwards. As earnings per share have risen, the share price has followed. And finally, you've got valuation re-rating. And I was casting around for some examples of this, and I think I set on one that we talked about at the Investor Summit, actually, Games Workshop. Started out yeah. as a niche hobby type business producing toy soldiers, quite a modest valuation, but eventually the market sort of woke up to its earnings potential and the quality of the business, its returns on capital, the trajectory of its turnover. And so actually its multiple, its price to earnings multiple has got richer over time. Investors are willing to pay more for each pound of earnings that the company makes today than they were say 10 years ago. And if you held during that period, then actually your shareholding becomes more valuable over time. So that gives you an idea where growth comes from, these three engines. And I then started thinking about, well, we don't really talk about growth a lot in the UK. Why is that? When you hear about big global growth names, you usually hear about US names, don't you? Microsoft, you Apple, do. Google, Tesla. Why is that? Because, you know, they're all technology businesses. And it's not like the technology sector is the only business in the world, the only sector in the world that's actually grown. The UK's got plenty. You know, you've got small financial capital businesses, fintech businesses that have grown. Wise, I think, is a good example. You have got some tech businesses. You've got Darktrace that listed, did fairly well.
Yep.
And so the UK has got growth potential in it, even if we don't necessarily look at it in the same way. And I think one of the drivers of UK growth, as opposed to technology, is actually our innovation and our research and development. I've just been reading, it's a very long document, but there's a white paper that's just come out in three parts from, I think it's the innovation, or the innovation company, something like that. Charles Hall's been promoting it on LinkedIn.
Right, okay, yeah.
And they were talking about this idea of the UK being an incubator economy, this idea that we yeah. take small companies, we grow them to a certain level, and before they become massive behemoths, someone comes and snaps them up and they disappear off the
yeah,
market.
Yeah, I think we spoke about this recently as well. Yeah, it's a recurring thing that we end up talking about because it's unfortunately that thing where the US tend to want to remain independent and carry on growing beyond £1 billion. So we've got loads of unicorns get to £1 billion market cap or valuation, should I say, and then it's like, okay, that we're done now, and then it's gone.
Yeah,
it's gone. It's subsumed by a larger, usually US entity.
Yeah, spot on. But it got me thinking about, well, what are these businesses that are growing that are being bought out? And actually, there's some really good innovation and R&D type companies in the UK. That's what's getting snapped up, the intellectual property.
Yeah, IP, yeah.
So, again, started looking at some ideas. You've got businesses like AstraZeneca, which I know you hold, which has just done unbelievable. When did that list? Do you know? Was it the 80s, 90s?
Oh, I cannot remember that information, mate. I'll have to
but
go and have a look at
time.
It. It's a long time ago. Came out of ICI, if you remember.
Right. Well, actually, I was a bit of fluff under the bed, I think, at the time. So, but
Carry on, mate. I'll find it for you.
you know, again, big business or starts out as a small business, but they've invested in oncology, you know, cancer treatments. They've poured billions into their R&D, and the share price has marched up as they've developed new innovative treatments and medical research. The business has grown. You've got Croda. Again, we talked about this on a podcast a while back, but they're sort of a green chemicals company, sustainable ingredients. We've got some real good innovative businesses here in the UK. And that then, oh, go on. Have you
Right.
found it?
So I should know this, but it was June 1st, 1993, and I got the shares 1994.
1994. Can you remember what you bought them for?
Oh, mate, that'd be telling, wouldn't it? That'd be telling. The very first batch going in there like that, going,
Yeah,
yeah,
20 pence and half a bag of pork scratchings.
absolutely scary. Yeah, but this is what happens then. I think. Going to encapsulate what you're saying there, I think we have to be mindful that everyone says that the US market's overvalued, right?
Exactly.
Take out the tech and the other 493 stocks in the S&P 500. How have they performed? They've not performed that well. The top seven has done a lot of the dragging of the performance for the S&P 500, and we've got a lot of quality companies. But they've been neglected because all this money has been pulled out of the U UK market, and most of it's
Yeah.
gone overseas, and most of it's gone to the US. You know, some of it's gone into gilts, yes, some of it's gone into bonds. But if, you know, as Charles Hall said, if we had the same percentage of equity invested as we had in the 70s and 80s in the US, in the UK market, the FTSE 100 would now be at 10, maybe 15,000 rather than 9,000. Yeah. But yeah, we've got some wonderful companies. We don't want to talk too much again about Games Workshop, but over the past 10 years, it's up 2,594%. Yeah, as
Yeah.
a company that started with, like you say, toy soldiers. So there are some innovative companies. Ashtead is another one, up 478% over 10 years. Alma, we've spoken about before, that's up 353% over 10 years. Computer Center, which has had a bit of a nadir over the last couple of years, is up 218%. And then there's two stocks I'm going to talk about which are up significantly. Judges Scientific, another favorite of lots of people, is up 335%. And then, of course, we spoke about Goodwin, up 364%. So we've got the quality of companies out there, but everyone's looking over the other side saying it's greener because they want to be involved in that, in what's winning even faster or doing even better than the likes of Games Workshop. However, there's a couple of stocks which I'm going to talk about which have outperformed the S&P 500, which ordinarily people say those that's the go-to place if you want to be passive and just go and put your money on something that's going to annualize and compound regularly better and outperform without doing a lot of work. We'll talk about the S&P 500 and these two stocks in a little while. But yeah. Anyway, we've got loads of quality stocks, and we need to be
We
invest. We need
have.
to invest in them. Otherwise, it will. Where's the book that I've got that I'm reading now? Otherwise, we'll continue to do this. A very old book, yeah,
Yeah,
and it
Britain for
still
sale.
reads exactly the same. And what's it say on it? Alex Brummer, Britain for Sale, British companies in foreign hands, the hidden threat to our economy. It's still going on, yeah, still going on. And that this book, mate, is. And was written in 2012, 2013, 13 years later, still going on. Another takeover today. Yeah, another takeover. Another company being taken. PRS REIT going.
Yeah.
NAV's at 139 last shout. This particular takeover is right, 115 to 118. So the NAV's
Yeah.
140, but you're asking for sub 120 probably, 115 maybe. Plus 1.1 dividend, 1.1 pence dividend.
Yeah.
We just got to stop letting this happen, mate.
Yeah. It's absolutely farcical. And so that th this is really this is what I wanted to talk about, because we there's this perception in the UK, there's this narrative going on that we've got nothing but old dying banks, old dying oil companies, UK investors don't know what they're doing. The UK is this irrelevant island off the coast of Europe. Who cares? Just write it off. And it's absolute nonsense. It really, really is. The UK is not dead. RELX is proof of that. Halma is proof of that. Games Workshop is proof of that. I've got a couple in my portfolio. Look at how Concurrent Technologies is doing the last couple of years. They had so many orders coming in that they had to double their stock intake and put the staff on 7 days a week working overtime, and they still couldn't keep up with all the orders coming in.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
It's, you know, these are not dying, useless businesses that nobody wants. These are thriving, healthy companies that we should be proud of.
Agreed, mate, agreed.
So, really support them. Yeah, you know, compounding takes patience. But if you let these businesses work for you over time, you will get the rewards. And so I was hoping we could kind of knock some ideas around about some of the names we've seen that would fit this sort of category.
Absolutely, we can. As I said, I've got two that have outperformed the S&P 500, which has done annualized over the last 10 years, approximately 10.5%. Yeah.
Very nice.
My first one, which I can share with you, is a company which a lot of its weighting of its valuation is overseas. But it is, Henry, let me just get the details here for you. And we have spoken about this in a previous podcast. So I'm conscious that people are going to go, well, we're talking about the same stock, but it's been a while, so I don't mind talking about it again. And that company, Henry, is 3i Group.
Ah, yes. Yep.
Yeah. So we've got 3i Group, and it is essentially... Let me just get my notes, mate. Let me get my notes so I can actually read it parrot fashion. Yeah, it is the leading British multinational investment company specializing in private equity and infrastructure. Listed in the FTSE, London Stock Exchange, and a FTSE 100 constituent. Founded in 1945, headquartered in London, focuses on investing in mid-market companies across Europe and North America. Primarily targets private equity and infrastructure investments to generate long-term sustainable returns. Hear that word? Sustainable returns, Henry. Not just 1 year, we're having a really good year. Next year, we're at second half year weighted. And then the third year, it's a profit warning. We're talking about sustainable earnings, mate, with assets under management going on towards 28 billion as of 2024. Flagship holding of 3i is Action, a Dutch discount retailer with over 3,000 stores across 12 European countries, Henry. And the reason I'm talking about this particular one is because of the performance of the company. I just said earlier, S&P 500 performance annualized over the past 10 years, approximately 10.5. 3i's annualized over 10 years is more than double that. 27%. Yeah.
Spectacular.
5 year annualized, 35%. 3 year annualized, 53%. The only fly in the ointment regarding this particular stock, if there is one, is that on a NAV basis, Henry, the last actual NAV was £27.11 as of 30th of June. And the share price, if I get it correct, for 3i, I think it's 40 odd quid, I think. I'm just going to, sorry, £38 so 21. £38 21. Yeah. So it's 41% higher. And the 52-week range is £31 41 to £44 and 3 pence. So you've got a NAV that's way above, 41%. So any sort of fly in the ointment error with Action Group, that could come down very, very quickly. So there's a lot of waiting on that. Last valuation was just shy of 19 billion for Action on its own, standing on it as a standalone sort of company. So as you can see, that, you know, with a 57.8% stake of Action Group, how much is weighted towards that one particular entity of it. So you've got to be mindful of that. But I just see that sort of compounding. Even in recent years, the 3 years is 53.3 and the 10-year is 27. I just see that as a steady compounder. You know, you look at the dividend yield, it's not that high. Yeah. But it's still managing to churn out 27% annualized. So that's a compounder for me. And it's one of those which, in relative terms, you should be able to continue to sleep relatively easy. Yeah, so that's my first one that I would say to people to go away and research. I think you've heard me talk about it before. So go away and have a look at go and have a look at how it's done, what it's done. And anytime it has a bad period of 6 months to a year, it could be a good opportunity to actually purchase the shares. Lots of research needed.
Yeah. I like it. It's definitely a leading name. When I was doing the research for this episode, it popped up for me as well, because presumably we were looking at similar sorts of metrics.
Yeah.
The reason I didn't pick it as one to discuss was because my concerns are about bought growth. So
I
mean by that is that you've effectively got a model with 3i whereby they have to keep making acquisitions, growing them, and then disposing of these assets. And that works, and clearly they're very, very good at it. You know, what did the annualized return was 27% or something. So they've obviously done a very good job, and yet it does come with a risk, that model. Debt fueled roll-ups and, you know, significant amounts of M&A can go wrong. We talked about Judges Scientific a moment ago, and this is one I've recently opened a position, actually. Only a small one, because I've got concerns about the roll-up model. And they work fine. It's great when they work, but when they don't, it can really go badly wrong. And Judges Scientific saw this. One of their recent acquisitions was... I think it was basically a survey, seabed survey equipment firm.
Okay.
And they had one big customer who I think was a Japanese firm that does these surveys. And 1 year, I think it was 2024, it was either 24 or 25, they announced that next year's survey wasn't going to happen. And so the big order they were expecting didn't come through. And so profit fell off a cliff the year after Judges bought it. As far as I'm aware, they've since announced that that survey will be taking place. It was delayed, but you saw the reaction in the share price, and straight away it went from being these guys can do no wrong to hang on a minute, and the share price cratered.
That's often the case, Henry, but therein lies the opportunity, because if it is a case of an overreaction, you've got an opportunity there. You know, we spoke just now about 3i and about almost like a debt fuel sort of strategy. But they don't sell and offload and dispose that often, because they tend to be one of those that they buy, they do, they grow, and they tend to grow it for a long term. They've had their stake in Action for a long time. And at the moment, 3i Group's balance sheet, they've got $428 million in cash.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Low gearing at approximately 3%. And they've got a well-funded revolving credit facility. Yeah. And I'll caveat the cash bit, because it's a 38 billion market cap, sorry, 36.5 billion market cap. So in the respect of 428 million, that sounds a lot, but it's not a lot when you look at the market cap of the whole company.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have that cushion of nearly £500 million if you can.
Yeah.
Could they have more? Of course, but 3% gearing.
Yeah.
Many companies don't mind that.
I like it.
Yeah. So, yeah, just the NAV. For me, the only fly in the ointment is the NAV. You know, you put all the parts together and the NAV is 40. I don't want to pay £1.41 for something that's worth a pound. Thank you very much. But, you know, but compounding it 27% each year, I'd like that. So you've got to balance that out, haven't you? The risk-reward. There you go.
I think it's Hargreaves Lansdown have got a tool. And if you plug in the name, it shows you the average discount or premium to NAV over time. And I don't know if it does it for every share, but it certainly seems to do it for funds. And I always forget, to be perfectly honest with you, but when I do remember, I quite like going and having a look at that. And if you can buy things on a lower discount or premium than the average, it's often a good
Ah,
buy.
so the 3-year average, the 5-year average, the 10-year average, you can then look
Exactly.
and think, ah, I'm at this moment below that. So therefore
Yeah.
it's a good opportunity.
So it
Yeah, I think
shows you
I th
there's a the x-axis goes from sort of plus 20% premium to minus 20% premium,
yeah.
or minus 20% discount, I should say.
Yeah.
And so the line that runs along shows you where the discount or the premium was over time. And so you can see, well, on average, it was on a 10% discount, and then something happened and it dropped down to 5%.
Yep.
And now it's gone back up to 10. Well, if you bought at the 5% discount, this is where the valuation multiple expands, and that's part of the driver of capital returns.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a similar possible solution slash tool database in the AIC website. Yeah, Annabelle
Gotcha.
Brody's AIC website. So that might be useful as well. But yeah,
Excellent.
there's lots of things to keep an eye on regarding stocks. And one of your favorites, obviously, is debt as well.
Yeah.
And they're not indebted, so that's a
Yeah.
bonus.
I like it. I like it. I've got
Okie
one
dokie.
for you that
Go for it.
it fits in a similar bucket of big UK champions, this. And it's a
Yep.
company I've looked at for years and years and years. I've never owned it. Don't own it. I don't know why I don't own it, incidentally. I've not got a good reason, but I don't own
You want to
it.
buy
It's
it cheap, Henry. That's the reason we know.
yeah. I'm a cheapskate. Nottinghamian. It is Experian. The ticker is EXPN. And it's
Yeah.
one of the leading credit bureaus in North America and the UK, providing consumer information that is basically the basis for granting credit. They provide decision-making analytics, marketing data, and credit products and services. Roughly a quarter of the company's revenue is generated outside of the US and the UK, predominantly in Latin America and Asia. So it's got a little bit of diversification. And this is a business that just grows relentlessly. Even the current forecast, the forecast earnings per share growth are at 13%. You've got a 20% average return on capital employed since 2012. And again, we've talked about return on capital employed a lot. I've sort of got a benchmark of about 10%. This is double
Okay.
that. And you've also seen PE expansion of about 20 times to about 30 times. Now, you could argue, therefore, it costs me more, but I would argue this is potentially an indicator that the market is valuing it more highly. Maybe this is becoming a more attractive business over time. And to me, this is one that has just been a great growth story for many, many years. Very, very nice business.
Yeah, it's one of those tech companies that I think don't get enough, use the wrong, this is not a pun, folks, enough credit for what they do. They've been around for a good while. They've been profitable for a long time. They throw off a stack of cash. The margin return on capital invested is brilliant. And it deserves to be treated as a premium quality stock. Performance-wise, they've done really well for the shareholders as well. And it's one of those companies that I think about the last time I looked at it was split possibly half and half regarding where their revenues came from, because a lot of it comes from the US, and some of it, probably half of it comes from the UK, if I remember rightly. But it seems to me that more and more of their revenue is coming from overseas. So that's a driver for growth, but the competition then gets higher. I think, is it Equifax is the main
Yeah, there's
competition in the
Equifax, there's a few of them. Yeah.
There's a few of them in the US, but they're a quality company. So the only thing I would say with Experian is long may they remain independent, mate, because those banks and those other entities that are looking at them, I'm sure they're going to come sniffing around at some point.
Yeah.
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 But as a quality outfit, what's the performance been like, Henry, of the last 3 or 4 years share wise?
Well,
Because
if
last
you
time I
go
looked,
back
it
to the
hasn't
beginning
really
of
gone.
2020, Yeah, it was down at about £25 a share. It's currently just
Right.
under £40 a share.
Right. Okay. So it's not done too badly then, 25 to 40
So I'm
to
just having a
40.
look on ShareScope.
Yeah.
It has done 4% compounded, which is
Right.
amazing.
Over 10 years.
That's over 5 years.
5 years. Okay.
Yeah, about
Yeah, but
5%.
yeah, I think so, sometimes, Henry, it's about buying quality. You don't need to be, shooting the lights out. I've given an example there where it's at 27% over 10 years, which is to me a very, very aggressive sort of return, but it's been achieved. But sometimes it's about, going back to Buffett's sort of terminologies and quotes, it's about not losing money,
Well,
being
I also I
invested.
think if you take the problem with looking at quoted annualized return figures that platforms like ShareScope give you, where that they take a starting 5 years ago, so 17th of September 2020, and they just draw a line at today. That's not really when you probably have bought this. You're very unlikely to have picked the 17th of September. Some other platforms will take the 1st of January. You're probably not going to have bought it on the 1st of January. When might you have bought this? Well, in 2022, the share price got down under £25. Now, if you bought it at under £25 and held it today, your annualized return would be higher than the 4.1% that the platform's quoting. And this is something that I think people miss because they look backwards and go, 5%. Probably do better sticking it in a bank account and not have the headache. But that's not when you want to be buying. You want to be buying when there's, blood in the streets, for want of a nicer phrase, when there's maximum pessimism about the shares, when the world's falling apart. And you look back over a couple of years and there are some big dips. 2022, it went from £35 a share down to 22. Fantastic
Agreed.
buying opportunity. It's then gone all the way back up to 40.
Yeah.
So this is the
You
thing with quality businesses, they recover.
they do. And this is the beauty, Henry, of doing the research and putting the time in, and having your watch list. You keep banging on about watch list. And you see that stock, and you've mentioned the stock there. Yet I still haven't bought. I still haven't bought it. You have to have in your mindset, if this was to happen, I'm going to buy it. But what happens is, the share price, Experian, for instance, example, will go from £40 down to, let's say, 28, not 25, and you weren't happy to buy it at 40. And then at 28, you see the news of the reasons why it's there, and you're going, oh, it's a bit risky now at 28, isn't it?
Not sure I like it
I'll
now.
wait. I'll wait a bit longer. I'm not sure exactly. And I've done the same. And then you watch it for a little while. It goes to 32, and you're that thinking, "Darn it, I missed it. I don't want to pay 32 for it now. I want to pay 28." So you've got to either trickle in and pyramid in, or you've got to go, "Actually, I'm going to invest now, because I'm not buying it for the next 3 weeks or the next 3 months or maybe even the next 6 months. I'm buying it for its long-term potential returns, and it's a quality company, which is now on offer for the first time in a year."
Yep.
Yeah, in 2 years. Yeah. And if they resolve this, because the quality management that they've got, it could end up going back to £40 a share. Yeah. So, it's a consideration to be had anyway, Henry. And the markets are where they are, and everyone's saying that everything's on sale regarding our FTSE 100, FTSE 350, FTSE All Share, and Quality AIM stocks. So if we're not buying them, someone's going to come with a takeover on, where is it today? We're Wednesday the 17th. Between now and Friday the 19th, when this podcast goes out, there'll be at least one other takeover of the UK PLC. Yeah. And at least two before this podcast is replaced by
Oh,
podcast
sorry.
163 in 2 weeks'
Yep.
time. And we'll be looking at going, "Oh, that premium's 23%, that premium's 33%, that premium's 40%. I wish I'd bought it." Well, you can. It's on sale today, folks. You listen to this podcast, have a look at the charts, have a look at the fundamentals. There's a stock in your portfolio now that potentially could be taken over in the next 2 weeks, if not before Christmas. But there's also a stock there that you've been dreading not buying because you think it's expensive. And when someone makes a premium purchase of it, it'll be up 30, 40, 50%. So yeah, Experian, quality company, Henry. A good call, a good tech company. And I reiterate, that doesn't get the credit it deserves. Right. I am going to go one further, Henry, and I'm going to talk about another compounder, not as huge a compounder as the previous 3i one I gave you, but this one has done reasonably well. It's a 6 billion market cap company as well, UK listed. We haven't gone international, as some people pointed out to the last podcast when you covered Greece, a Greek bank. And this is a UK listed company, 6 billion market cap, and formerly known as, and everyone hates it when a company changes its name, don't they? They just hate it. Formerly known as Intermediate Capital Group PLC, is now simply known as ICG PLC. Using less ink on the printing, Henry, for all the things that they put out with branding. Yeah. Just
I'm
six
sure
letters
someone
instead
got
of.
Paid a lot of money for that as well.
Absolutely. And the branding people got paid as well. Everyone's greasing the wheels, mate, making a fortune. So ICG PLC, current share price is £22.62. 52-week price range is £15.39 to £24.68. So nearer the top of its 52-week range. The PE is around, I'd have to have a share scope, around 14-ish.
It
yield
is,
of three yeah. points. Yeah, 14, yeah, 14.55 I had here earlier. And yield 3.7. Only changed its name in July. So most people that are looking for Intermediate Capital will not find it. It's now ICG PLC. And it actually rhymes that. I like that. IGC.
You want to sell on a jingle on the
PLC.
TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to be MTV. Yeah, yeah. I want to be on MTV. Right. Okay. So who are they? What are they, Henry? It's an asset management company that divides its business models into two segments, a fund management company and an investment company. If only all of them could do it so well, eh? We've had so many. I'm not going to trigger you, Henry. Don't say it. Don't say the name. The fund management company is the operating business of the group that sources and manages investments in the European, Asian Pacific and North American markets. It allocates capital to corporate investments, capital market investments, real assets and private equity secondary market transaction. The investment company co-invests alongside third parties in new and existing funds. Its plan emphasizes a growth-orientated activist long-term approach to investing. Note activist and long-term, whereas most activists want to just get in there, shake it up and get out within 12 months to 18 months. It generates revenues through interest income and secondarily through management fees. Okay, Henry. Founded in 1989 by six investment professionals. Only six. Ooh, they've grown since then. And now grown into a leading public financial services companies in over 20 locations worldwide. So if that's not a UK success story, you know, in 20 different locations worldwide from six investment professionals starting it in what was 36 years ago. That's growth for you, Henry.
I had no idea this was as big as it is.
It is, mate.
To be perfectly honest, Intermediate Capital Group, I thought that was like a dodgy little subprime lending business. I really, really did. I really, really did. I thought these were the guys that were going around, you know, robbing grannies to pay for Christmas turkeys.
Well, Henry, you are to blame for them changing their name back in July, if that's what you thought they did.
It's a good thing.
They're
putting
on the balaclava.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dear. So they're involved in structured and private equity, private debt, real assets, public and private credit. And they will invest in pre-IPO seeding, IPO financing, management buyouts, management buy-ins, etc., etc. Last trading update was in July. And the highlights there, Henry, were really
good. I love it.
Pretty
darn
good.
I mean, Interestingly, actually, mentioning IPOs and buyouts, I've got a question for the audience here. I have been doing some research on how family offices operate around the world. Big, big, big asset managers, basically, but not fund managers, families. And I started doing some reading. One of the categories that came up on this report I was reading suggested that private equity formed between 10 and 20% of the average family office holdings, but they split it into three parts. They had sort of seed capital, growth capital, and IPO capital, I think were the three categories. And it really, really got me thinking. I'm just curious if anybody's got some interesting names in that space. You had a couple. We had a couple of private equity ones on the show we discussed, but it's not an area I know a lot about. I've looked at venture capital trusts and the like, and most of them just seem to do terribly. So, if anyone's got any names that they're interested in that I could have a look at, I'll happily have some research ideas back.
I think with regards to the private equity names, Henry, probably just go to the AIC website
Go
and
and have
put
a
in
look.
private equity as an asset class you want to investigate, and you'll see a couple of funds there that cover that space. There are also some funds that are essentially invested in equities, but also have a little segment which they invest in into private equity as well as a subsector of where they invest. But the two I've spoken about, 3i and ICG,
They're good
what are they
names.
investing in?
They are very,
Private
very good
equity.
names. Exactly.
Private equity. But if you said, "Oh, find me some private equity companies," you'd definitely see 3i in that space. You wouldn't necessarily see ICG in that space.
Like I say, I thought they were a subprime lending business. So shows you
Exactly.
what I know
And
about the space.
it's easy to be misguided, but this is what happens with it. For me, and I get told off for this a lot, and some people say, "You waste far too much time researching stocks." Okay, so what's the cost of me not researching a stock and just going in whack and then, Hail Mary, cross my fingers, hope to die, the stock does okay. I know what 3i does now. I know what ICG does. So if I wanted to go and investigate it further, I'd go and spend a few more hours doing it. But taking the time stops me from making unnecessary errors. I've got no control what happens after I bought the stock and what the company does and what the CEO and CFO does, or what Trump says, or what Carney says, or what Rachel Reeves says next. I can only go with the information I've got today and last week and the week before last when I was researching stock. What happens after that, I don't know, which is why I'm often on X going, "Oh my gosh, that stock has just been whacked and I own it." Yeah, you and I have been on here numerous times talking about S4 Capital. We both did research in that. Yeah, and even this week, yeah,
Oh,
I
it came
sold
back
it
with
at
another shocker.
£1 odd 2 years ago or whatever the time frame is, and it's still going down lower. And I'm going, what is he doing, Sir Martin Sorrell? The share price now sub 20 pence, and it
He's
was at
making an
£8
almighty mess. Well, what really
X
got
amount of
me,
years
he
ago.
announced, and he was naughty doing this, he announced that there'd been takeover conversations, but early stage and unsubstantiated. The company that he quoted came out on Monday and went, we'd have no idea what he's talking about. We weren't talking about a merger. We'd what you want about? And what are you? I don't know.
Yeah,
I that whole thing just stinks of desperation to me.
but you're out of it now. I've been out of it for a good couple of
I
years
am.
now, and I'm watching it. And someone nudged me on in my Twitter, sorry, X DMs, and went, "Pete, you used to hold X. You used to own S4.
S4.
What do you think of it? What do you think of it now? You sold it at £1.08 or whatever it was. And it's now at, I think it was at 19 pence. Are you buying it now at this lowly price? It's got to be worth more than this." I'm going, I don't know what it's worth.
No way.
But given all the different sort of, noise and exclamation marks and whoppers and stuff that weren't whoppers, I'm like, I've got better things to do than that.
Yeah.
I like a little speculative punt every now and then. I've taken one recently. And ordinarily, when somebody on X or a couple of people on X are shouting out expletives about a company being an absolute TURD, I usually just pop up and go, "Let me have a look at that." Yeah. So I've done that recently on with one stock, but I've got no interest in S4. I suspect the one thing he's possibly going to do next is try and take it private. And even then, he won't give anyone else a premium for it. Yeah.
I don't know where he's going to get the money from. I mean, if I was a banker, I wouldn't give him a couple of hundred million to go.
Well, I think he's wealthy enough, and he's got enough friends in large places that could pretty help him. But, you know, what will he take it out at? 20% premium to what it is now. That gives you what, 23 pence, 25 pence?
Not even.
Yeah, going to give you a pound for
it's
it.
It's down at 14 pence or something ridiculous.
Wow. My condolences to all shareholders that are still waiting for him to get back to 8 quid.
Horrific mess.
It's not getting back to 8 quid. But going back to what I was saying about
growth companies,
ICG and growth companies, financial wise, revenue wise, it's still growing. ICG, Henry, is still growing, and you would be wise to go and give it a little look, my friend. Yeah, regarding their assets under management and where they're spending the money and how they're actually doing. Yeah, they're doing all right, Henry. Assets under management now from six guys starting it in 1989, $123 billion.
Very nice.
123. You know what? How often do you hear people talking about previously intermediate capital?
Well,
hopefully they'll start the conversation now talking about ICG as it is now.
Yeah.
All right. I don't own it, by the way, folks. You know, he's talking about it like this and da-da-da-da. He owns it. I don't own the stock.
Neither do I. I like it. I like it. I mean, that we've discussed some good names there, and they give you a flavour of what's available in the market. But, you know, I think it's important to remember that whatever your style of investing is, there's always opportunities out there. And it never, ever hurts to look at people often contrast income investors and growth investors. To me, they're sort of two sides of the same coin. You can't have the income without a company that's growing because they're not generating any revenues or any profits. And likewise, it's very, very difficult to have a company that's growing if it's not really producing any income. So,
agreed.
Difficult. And by income, I don't necessarily just mean dividends. There are other forms of income. So food for thought. But, you know, I think a balanced portfolio does need both components, and I think it's important that we all understand both components when we're looking at investing. And on that note, you know, before we wrap up the episode, I was thinking about a conversation that I'd been having with somebody at the Investor Summit, actually, that had been in the audience, that listens to the podcast, whose name entirely eludes me at this stage, to my shame. But we've been having a chat about how to prepare family members and how to educate them around what it is we're doing. Because, you know, Peter, you and I are sat here on a Wednesday evening. It's pitch black outside. We're talking about shares and broadcasting to 4,000 people all around the world. And we all sit there talking about dividends and looking at growth. And what is this? And on that thought, I just wanted to, you know, leave listeners with this idea, this thought to chew on about how we pass on not just our own portfolios, but the knowledge behind them. Because we're all accumulating knowledge whilst we're studying, hopefully. And a lot of us have spent years, and we will spend decades, building and curating these collections of shares, growth shares and income shares and funds and private equity trusts and all sorts. But what happens when we're not here? What happens if I don't wake up tomorrow morning? You know, what does Verity do other than, you know, hopefully feel sad? You know, our wives and husbands and children, they're going to inherit not just the assets, but also the responsibility of looking after all of this lot. And without guidance, that, I imagine, would feel incredibly overwhelming on top of the tragedy of actually losing us. So to me, the best gift that we can give our families, it's not just the portfolio, it's not just this collection of numbers on a screen. It's the education to understand it. And that means explaining why we own this stuff, what role dividends play, why patience matters, even leaving simple notes for them or a one-page plan that sets out the principles behind what we're trying to achieve with our investments. And so I wanted to just spend a few minutes batting some ideas around. One of the things I've talked about is family offices, and I've done a lot of research into family offices. They fascinate me as a concept. And one of the things that family offices do is have an investment philosophy, a one-page summary of why you invest the way you do. So if you weren't here, somebody could pick it up and they could go, Henry says he focuses on dividend payers for income, right? He likes long-term compounders for growth, and he wants to keep 10% in cash so he can pay the bills. I understand that. And I can look at the portfolio and I can go, those ones pay income. Those ones I want to leave alone because they're going to compound. And that's the money I'll pay the gas bill with if anything happens. And that hopefully would help Verity or whoever from feeling lost and would give them some sort of an idea what to do if I wasn't around to click the buttons, as it were.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the TWINPEETS promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, Henry. I know that the key to most investing that you, the journey that you and I have been on, has all been education and data fact based. And then action-based as well. So in order to nurture anybody else in that sort of space, we have to give it time. We have to give them time. I went to see a good friend of mine with the two bosses a couple of weeks back, and their 18-year-old had been given from their grandparent some stocks and shares in trust. They've now turned 18. So they've got this little mini portfolio, right? Of stocks, and they're asking me about this and asking me about that, and I'm trying to have dinner and trying to have talk to them as well. And then the younger, the middle child, Joel, who's left a little message on YouTube, by the way, he pipes up and said, I'm going to get mine in 4 years time, but I want to know this and I want to do that and I want to be a millionaire. And I'm going, Joel, Joel's running before he knows what the stocks and shares are yet. So we've got to take the time to just educate them and give them something to read and digest and get a grips to what a share is to start with. But on this conversation that you started with me, I was thinking that one of the ways to get children, per se, interested in stocks is to find out what they are interested in. Yeah. So going back to the Phil Oakley sort of analogy is have a look at what's around you, right? My way of going about it, and I said this to Joel, well, what are you interested in? Yeah. What sort of stuff are you interested in? So you've got cousins and family members and so on and so forth. You've got, you know, those of you that are listening, find out what that young person's interested in. Yeah. For instance, and I've pulled this example together. If they're into sports, right? Tennis is a good example, right? Formula One, for instance, right? Have a look. Ask them to go and investigate. You have a look yourself and do a bit of research on it. And then ask them to go away and do some research on it. Ask them to go away and look at the brands that sponsor Wimbledon or tennis, the American Open, US Open, right? Have a look at the Formula One. What are the brands that they see jumping out and all the cars and all the rest of it? And if they're interested in it, they'll actually go deep down and start looking at those companies and they'll pull out some of the names, right? So I've got a couple of the names here. And Wimbledon. No, they can't buy into Rolex, right? One of the main sponsors, but they could possibly buy into Watches of Switzerland if they wanted to, right? They can't buy into Slazenger, yeah, but they can possibly buy into IBM, one of the larger sponsors of it. Yeah, they could buy into American Express, Amex. Is that listed? I'm sure. I think it
I
is.
think it is Amex.
Yeah. So they could buy into that. So you've got all those different sponsors. Then you've got all the brands that actually sponsor the individual players, Henry. Yeah. So you could have a look, ask them to have a look into those sort of brands and all the sponsors of those sort of companies. The footwear companies, we all know what the footwear companies are, the Nikes of the world, the Adidases of the world. They could investigate and look into that, but they're researching something that they're already interested in. And the difficulty that you and I have, and you listeners have as a cohort, we have as a cohort, is that we're adults. They say they're interested in investing, but as soon as you start talking to them, their eyes are dulling and they're not they're already. But if you get them to be interested in something they're already, talk to them about something they're already interested in, i.e. tennis or Formula One, they're more likely to stay a little bit more alert to it. And you go, well, you know, well, that's the car that X, Y, and Z drives. Look at the brands on that. Right, okay. And they'll be more energized to go and do that. If you go, oh, here's a book that Alex Brummer wrote, you know, 11 years ago, and they go, I don't know, I think I want to read that. It looks boring. And oh, there's no pictures. I'm discrediting children, generalizing, but you know what I mean. Give them a task that generates and energizes them,
I
and then
like
just
that.
go back to them again in a couple of weeks' time. Say, how did you get on? Well, you
I
found that,
really
I
like
found this.
that.
Maybe, you know, have this information that I found for you, and then marry that with what you've got, and then come back with me some more. Yeah. And
I
then we can
really
get to
like
the
that.
bit about what's the stock, what's the return on capital, because the complicated bits that will go down further down the line. Because Joel just wants to know, where do I open an account? I'm like,
Well,
no, mate, you don't do that just yet.
that's the thing, and I talk a lot about principles, and I think that's kind of what you're touching on here. It's teaching the principles, not the tactics. You know,
Yeah.
your wife, your children, you know, they don't have to be stock pickers themselves the same way that we are. I mean, they're never going to be the same way that we are because, well, I mean, we don't know what we're doing.
They're likely to be better, is what you're trying to get at. Yes,
Exactly.
Henry, they are.
You know,
Yes.
but there are certain rules, certain principles that I think will always apply. Patience. Patience is a virtue, my grandmother used to say to me over and over again whilst I was, you know, being very impatient. But it went in. Patience is a virtue. What does that mean? Teach them the meaning of patience. Diversification. What does it mean? You know, if I give you £10 in one go and it's a single bet, we're going to go left or we're going to go right, and you're going to get £10 or you're not, right? You've got everything on one bet. If I give you five ways to win £2, odds are you'll get a fair chunk of it. Avoiding debt, you know, teach them simple methods. If you want to go and go and buy a PlayStation game and it's 50 quid, fine, I'll give you the 50 quid. In a week, you're going to pay me back 75, and in 2 weeks, you're going to pay me back 100. They will very quickly learn, oh my days, I do not want to go into debt. You know, and I'm not saying treat your children as don't be a loan shark to your own family people. It's not good. But it's teaching them the principles, because that also encourages them to ask questions now whilst you're here to explain.
Can I just touch on, that's the bit that really gets me, Henry. It's about building that level of curiosity. Yeah. And if you've got a curious mind in a sense of wanting to know and learn stuff, and you can trigger that in them, then you've already got a potential better investor than you ever were, because that curiosity just builds and builds and builds, and that momentum of wanting to have more and more information, it just generates and permeates through almost everything they do. Yeah. So if they're 14 now and they're going to be thinking about their GCSEs in a little while, that curiosity will end up leading them to actually do research and homework on things they've not been asked to do yet. So they're already ahead of the other children in that cohort of what they're doing. Yeah. So yeah, just stretch the brain a little bit. And once it's been stretched, it ain't going back to where it was before. You know, you can. I love the idea of creating and nurturing information junkies, people that just want to learn and they want to come back and they think, ah, you know what? Uncle Henry, I've got a question for you. You know that you don't get those sort of kids, and you're sitting there going, "Uh-oh, what's it going to be?" And then they just stun you with a question, and you go, "Oh my gosh,
I haven't got a
no, I
clue.
didn't know that." And you can see the smile on the face is like, "Yes, just got, I've got him." You know what I mean? I love that. I love that.
You're spot on. You're spot on. You know, and we can't possibly cover the whole gamut of educating, but it's something that I was talking to somebody at the Investor Summit about this, and it really got me because Verity and I talk about investing a lot. I'm obviously passionate about it, but I think this is a thing that a lot of our listeners probably do encounter, that we've all got families. We've all got somebody that we will be leaving this to one day. How do you educate them? How do you engage them? How do you teach them the principles? Because it goes back to that saying of, you know, give a man a fish and he eats for a day, teach a man to fish and he eats for a lifetime. And, you
Absolutely.
know, investing is not just about compounding wealth. It's not just about numbers on a screen. It's about compounding wisdom, building something for you and your family. And passing on the assets is one thing, but being able to pass on the knowledge to manage them is the surest way to protect your family's future. And so I hope over, you know, the next year we can explore some more ideas, maybe do some little segments on it. So I think the listeners would enjoy that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Henry. And I love the fact that this pod, you know, in November will be coming up to 7 years, and one of the main pillars of that of the podcast has always been educational. You know, it's not about trading ideas, it's about educating, and hopefully everybody and anybody that's listened to at least one of these pods has got something from it, with a little nugget that sits in their mind that enables them to navigate the markets and to help parents, grandparents, uncles and aunts to support and nurture the next future investors. Yeah, we're doing a good job, and if we can do that a bit more so with the odd little segment here and there regarding the educational investing for those that are non-investors, then we can do that. Absolutely.
Lovely.
Yeah. Cool. Right. I think that's a wrap, Henry, is it?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I mean, just before we finish, I'd just like to say one more thing to the members of the audience out there. I know you're out there, I know you are listening, that have been with us for a while. Peter, you just said we're coming up to the 7 year anniversary. 7 years. I mean, this is fairly major. I've certainly not been here 7 years. I mean, I was a member of the audience for a long time. I've only been on the show for, it's coming up, have we just gone past the 2 year mark, my 2 year
Past
anniversary?
the 2 year mark, mate. Yeah, when you came to the rescue with your cape on. Yeah.
Two years. And I know there are members of you out there that have been with us for a long time. I know we've got new members, but we have got members that have been with us for a long time. And many of you have listened for years. You know, you've entered the competitions even before we knew that they were the Twin Peaks investing competitions. You guys were handing out books and gifts and all sorts. Lots of you have written in with great suggestions for topics, and we're always grateful for that. I'm always grateful for that. But we need your support in return. You know, taking the time to produce this podcast in the evenings, it's a pleasure, it's a privilege. I love it. I know Peter enjoys it, at least I hope he does. And
I do. I do.
easiest way you can give something back is by, you know, liking, commenting, subscribing on whatever platform you are listening to us on. And I know every channel out there has that glib little like, subscribe, and comment, and you almost tune it out, but it costs you nothing and it makes a massive difference in helping to keep this podcast growing. I know there are hundreds of you out there every week, and if each one of you left just one comment a month, it would massively transform the visibility we've got on the pod and help us bring in more guests that would enjoy the show, more insights, and more value for you. So if you enjoy the show, if you've ever found it enjoyable, insightful, or, you know, just entertaining when I'm going, make this the week that you hit the like button, leave us a little comment, and subscribe. We give you.
Just frozen there, Henry, bizarrely. He's just frozen on the screen there, mate, for a sec. And this is the beauty of living in London, folks. And Henry lives in a little part of London called Wimbledon, and whatever's going on Wimbledon Common is broadcast, has been frozen. He's back with us now. You shake your
I
head,
am
Henry. Are you
back.
back? Are you
I
back?
am back. I don't know
Womble.
where I cut out now. That's just.
No, but if you want to re repeat the last bit, the last segment of that segment.
What I was saying, if you've ever enjoyed an episode, if you found it insightful, if you found it useful, if you've enjoyed me prattling on about squirrels, make this the week that you hit that like button. Leave us a little comment, subscribe. We love producing the show for you, and we'd really appreciate your support back. And we are so grateful to everybody that does every week. We've got some of you that are almost super fans at this stage. If you're feeling a little shy and you don't know what to say, just give us a like, say thank you. It means the world to Peter and I. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you for your continued support.
Brilliantly said, Henry, despite the connectivity problems. I'm in agreement with you. We are blessed to still have you guys even listening to us, prattling on for an hour plus. Sometimes it's a marathon. You're thinking, I could have traveled to London and back during that time of listening. And some of you do, you use it for your journeys. So thank you ever so much for continuing to support us. And thank you for those that came out and supported us again at the Investor Summit, and those that have supported us on the Memphis fundraisers in the past and currently. Please, please continue to do that. We've got essentially just shy of 3 months until the end of the year. So we're trying to get that to £5,000 to support the employability thing. If you've got a couple of pounds, just please just drop that into the Just Giving page, www.justgiving/page/PeterHiggins, and that's the Memphis Just Giving page. You can find it on most of the links that you'll see for the podcast. But just reshare it. Yeah. Comment about it on whatever platforms you're on and say hello to us. Henry and I love to hear from you. So just get in touch with us and let us know what you liked and didn't like and what and give us some of the ideas that you'd like us to speak about going forward as well. All right. Folks, it's now 8:30. Henry and I have not eaten yet. We're gonna have some going to have some Scooby-Doos and rest before Henry recharges his batteries for another day of traveling backwards and forwards into London and work, which he has to do, because he's not yet retired, as you can see. I had this, by the way, before we go, I had this conversation with somebody the other day, Henry, since I had my alarm bell rang regarding your age. And I said, and they said, oh, yeah, we love the podcast, Pete. Oh, we love that, what you and Henry do. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. I said, have you listened to the recent podcast? Oh, I haven't listened to the recent podcast. I said, okay, it's not a problem. I said, tell me, how old do you think Henry is? Oh, cut long story short, Henry, you've been aged by 8 years, mate. Yeah, you were in your very early 40s, mate. Right? And I went, no. So there you go,
I'm
folks.
going to take that as a
Yeah.
compliment to my wisdom and maturity.
Wisdom, yes, exactly. So don't judge a book by the cover, folks. Henry's just in his early 30s, and a fantastic co-host he is. I'm blessed to have him on here joining me every 2 weeks, despite rain, shine, or holidays. So thank you very much, Henry.
My pleasure.
Okay, ladies and gents, that's a wrap for Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 162. Henry and I will see you at the end of the month, September. We'll record again on the 31st, I think. If give or take a day, depending on our availability, and we'll have another podcast out here, which will go out then at the beginning of October, mate. It's going so fast. Ladies and gents, take care. Enjoy your weekend. Hopefully the sun comes back and visit us for the weekend. If not, get your wellies out. Yeah. And get your brolly out as well. And still enjoy a bit of, outdoor time. Get out of the house, get out of the block. And enjoy the scenery. All right. Take care. God bless. Thanks, Henry.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.